Blog Talk Radio.
Some of the guests on this podcast will express their viewpoints based on their own research, and those views aren't necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio, Cursed Net, Breakthrough Radio, or its affiliates. This podcast will also be available on iTunes under the keyword Cursed Net.
Hello, everyone. My name is Byron LeBeau, and welcome to Cursed Net Breakthrough Radio. Today is Labor Day. It's September the 7th, 2008. And while you pull up your easy chair to give us a listen, we are working to bring you the good news about your salvation, and in this case, bringing forth the powerful testimonies that are giving glory to Jesus Christ as the Son of God, God the Son, by invoking his most powerful name, especially in times of trouble or spiritual attack. And tonight is no exception, as Joe Jordan has brought along a most interesting man from Ohio by the name of Jason. Before we start, I'd just like to make a comment that may be germane to what we are facing now here in 2008, and that revolves around the threat of mandatory vaccinations. Now, having researched the subject over the last 8 years myself, I've actually studied the history of vaccines and what these vaccines are made up of, and also how unnaturally they can affect our immune systems, I summed up the situation in a four-line poem. And I thought it was, at best, because since this is a spiritual program, to put what I feel in a poetic form simply because of its importance, and this is how I penned it. Injecting needles is alarming when its fruit may lead to harming. So postpone with all delay and live to breathe another day. Now, sometimes down the road, we may have the return of certain testimonial interviewees who have extensive knowledge that would echo the clarion call I penned in the aforementioned poem. In the meantime, it may become a new time that tries men's souls, so don't take my word for it, but read about it and research thoroughly and without delay both sides of the argument of vaccines and find out more about this little talked-about ingredients that are contained in all vaccines, not to mention the limited testing concerning the current alleged threat of the N1H1 virus. And just remember, a safe America is a vigilant America, keeping a close and discerning eye on all potential enemies, whether foreign or domestic, as we've discussed in previous programs. And now, I'd just like to welcome back Joe Jordan, who is also working this Labor Day. Hello, Joe. How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing good, Byron. Thanks for having me on again.
You're welcome. And thanks for working this Labor Day, Joe.
This is the kind of work I don't mind doing.
Yes, me either. So I understand you brought along a very interesting person, Jason from Ohio. How did that all come about, Joe?
Well, actually, Jason has been a written testimony up on our CE4 website for probably more than a year now, I think. And he came through us through our emails, and we added his testimony up on the website for those to see and show the name and authority of Jesus Christ over these entities and this experience. And a few months back, I put a request out on our Alien Resistance Gmail forum that we have set up. Nicole Malone manages that. And I put a request up there looking for anybody that has a testimony that would like to come on to the show and share the testimony audibly so that we could reach the people out there in the world through this venue. And Jason responded, and I didn't realize that who I was talking to at the time was actually somebody we already had their testimony in written form. But Jason has decided to come on and do it in audio form to where we can get a little more in-depth and into the study of what he's been through and how he can share as a testimony the power and authority of Jesus Christ over these entities. And, you know, I look back at this. Go ahead.
I just want to make sure I'm clear on this. When you say he's one of your written testimonies, does that mean he's one of the 78 or 80 testimonies that are up on your own website? Or
yes.
Is it just simply, okay, he's up there on your website as a written testimony then?
Yes, he's up there as a written testimony, but it was very short and to the point. But I knew that after talking to him just recently that I knew there was more to his story, and I knew that he should probably have the opportunity to come on and share it a little more in depth. Most of us aren't really writers, including myself. I'm not a writer. It's hard for me to sit down and tell my own story in written form, but if you give me the time to talk with you one-on-one, it'll come out, and it's a lot easier to share, which you've seen with a lot of the testimonies that we've worked with, that it's a lot easier to let them just speak it and go back and tell their story and what they've been through.
Yes, that's right. And as a matter of fact, I like that caption, Jason, that Greg had put up carved out of your bio regarding the entities that you eventually came in contact with. But it looks to me that your story goes back further than that, as far as, you know, leading up to this event that happened relatively later in your life. So I thought we would start, if you want to, okay, just glancing at your bio. For instance, it looks like you went from the straight and narrow to what I would frame as the broad and deadly, and then eventually back to the straight and narrow. So maybe you could paint us a picture of your early life, right from the very beginning, when things were relatively peaceful, up until the time you enter the Army. Let's start with that phase of your life and see how all of this transpired, okay?
Okay. I'll try to keep it boiled down for you. But it's a pretty involved story.
Right.
Growing up, I had not a normal childhood, but a good childhood. My parents are Christians and led me to Christ at an early age in 1975. And I went to probably half Christian schools and half public as we moved around the country, and studied the Bible a lot, you know, in class and on my own. I was interested in it and believed in it, and I made it a point to try to memorize Bible verses and things. And I'm glad that I had that foundation, because once I got out of the house, that's when trouble came knocking, and I opened the door to it, and, you know, it led me down a dark road, you know, with, you know, a lot going on, going into the Army, and then I went, within a few years, I was in a combat zone, and, you know, a lot of things were going on, and I just kind of lost track of what I should be doing and who I should be following. And just did my own thing, decided I was going to make my own decisions, and that's pretty much the start of all my problems.
Right. Okay. And when you said you were studying the Bible, does that mean that you did it on your own pretty much? And did that involve both the Old Testament and the New Testament, or did you zero in on just certain portions of the Bible?
Well, in school, you know, it was structured Bible study, and you'd usually work through, you know, from the Old Testament to the New Testament. So I was familiar with everything from front to back, and I had read it on my own at that point at least two times cover to cover. So I had a broad knowledge of what was in there, but, you know, anybody can pick up a book and read it and not have it really sink in. I mean, at the time, it did sink in, and it did give me a foundation that kept me from being totally lost. It was a good foundation, but I really probably didn't study it at the level that I can now.
Yeah. Did you actually talk to your folks about the Bible as you read it, or was this all an intellectual exercise that you did on your own?
No. If I had questions, I still to this day I'll ask them and run things by them, and because they both have training. I think my mom has a theology degree as well, but I know my dad has one, so they're pretty knowledgeable in the Bible.
Okay, good. And well. First of all, did anything else happen when you were young, before you took off and had gone into the Army, or should we sort of like focus from that point onward? Is there anything else?
I would focus from that point on. I mean, yeah, things happen, but nothing like a supernatural experience, or you know, no UFO sightings or anything like that. That I can remember, anyway.
Okay. Okay, well, we'll get to talk about the Army, but I heard a rumor, and I want to substantiate it if it's true, okay?
Okay.
And the rumor is that that you once dated a practicing witch.
Yes,
now,
that's
how
true.
Long did this last, and was it anything like the TV series Bewitched?
No, it was nothing like that. No, it was just being young and not really caring, and I dropped my guard, and you know, I saw it as childish kind of games, you know, parlor tricks and things, but there is definitely forces at work behind that, and I'm sure if I ran into her again that she would have a story or two to tell about bad things happening.
Right. Okay, did this happen when, just like in your later teens, or?
No, this was right when I had joined the Army. Within a few months of that, I met this girl and dated her for probably the first year, I think, of it, from like 18 to 19, maybe even to 20.
Uh-huh, yeah. How long did that last?
Just that time period from 18 to 19, maybe 19 and a half, like a year and a half, 2 years.
Okay, so she cut out on you, right? She took a broomstick and left.
Yeah.
Kind of. Okay, well, we won't dwell on that. I was just curious as to how deeply you might have got involved in a relationship with somebody who actually is practicing witchcraft. Because were you aware of the fact that a witchcraft was looked upon in a very severe way from the Old Testament writings?
Yes, I was aware of that. I was aware of that, and at the time, I wasn't just kind of backsliding. I had turned my back and pretty much didn't care.
Oh, okay. So this is like Jason 2 now.
Yeah.
Right? Jason 1 is the good, and I'm not trying to be facetious, but
no.
Really want people to get an idea of what's pulling you in one direction, and now all of a sudden you're about 18, I guess, and you're going into the Army, and the first thing you have is a friend who happens to be a practicing witch. You know?
Oh, yeah, it didn't take long for the setup to come.
Yeah. Well, that kind of leads me into my next question here regarding this whole idea. And I'd like you to give us a little idea on how deeply you got into the occult, whether it was just a curiosity or was actually something that you got involved practicing with or just trying to find out more about. What were some of the things that you actually were dabbling in there in your, I guess now it's your early 20s, huh?
Well, yes. To me, I was never practicing. I was not casting spells. I was not trying to read up on the subject. To me, it was something that, you know, if you're at a party and she wanted to read my palms or to do tarot cards, I would go along with it, you know, not seeing any danger, you know, not really sensing, you know, hey, wait a minute, we're messing with something here. And it was more of like that. I was not practicing myself, but I didn't care if anybody else did.
Right. So it's a I guess you would frame it as a healthy curiosity in certain aspects of life that you weren't quite aware of.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, I can understand that about the palm reading. I know when I was teaching way back when, and I always wanted to have something exciting to be showing the kids. And in those days, I was open to just about anything, kind of like most guys in their early 20s or whatever. And I actually researched palm reading, and just to show you how I did not connect the dots way back when, the way it was being presented to me, I actually got the impression that palm reading was an inductive science. It had nothing to do with witchcraft or occult. It was an inductive science where they actually took thousands of people who had died, and they were able to interpret the lines in their hands by the kind of life they led and the time of their death. You know, they seemed to have come up with a whole bunch of data that revolved around this. And I'm saying, well, if that's the case, then this is a pretty interesting subject, palm reading.
Oh, sure.
So
there's always a hook there that gets people in.
Yeah. So I can empathize with people if that's how they came into it, and not necessarily having dutifully read Deuteronomy or Leviticus or whatever and not connecting those dots. And that's why I bring this kind of stuff up, because it took me a long time to really start to see the dangers inherent in things that seemingly don't look like they're dangerous. And
right.
We've talked on this very radio program, Jason, about certain other types of divination, like dowsing, for instance.
Right.
Water witching, as they frame it. And you'll have people on both sides of the spectrum there in that and not see any danger in that either, you see? But some of the things that you did do, for instance, the Ouija board, did anything come of that, or was that just a call the game type of thing?
No, I mean, something came about from everything. I mean, I had played with the Ouija board, and yeah, it seemed like maybe something was moving it, but, you know, somebody else is holding it at the same time, so you don't really know if it's that person or not. You know what I mean? It's never a clear thing where, like, it will spell out all of your fortunes, you know, right in front of you. It's, you know, it's just
right.
enough to get you to go to the next step.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think I mentioned to you during our conversation, and I know I brought this up once just so that people can understand the connection between the paranormal and UFOs, that this is a true story that Frank Salisbury had written. I believe it was in a book called UFO Utah Display, something like that. It was back in the 70s. And he was a biologist, and he could not understand how he's studying why there's all this UFO stuff going on in Utah. And he came across this story about a group of young kids, probably fourth graders, who were dabbling with a Ouija board, and they were told by the Ouija board that they would see a UFO that night at 8 o'clock. So one of the little girls in the group was an Irish girl, and she ran home and told her parents that we were told by the Ouija board that we would see a UFO at 8 o'clock. And the parents, of course, were kind of like dismissing the whole thing. But at 8 o'clock, the girl went to the window, looked out, and she said, "Oh, look!" And then the parents came rushing over, and they looked out, and sure enough, there was this UFO. So, I'm looking at what Frank Salisbury is looking at, and he's scratching his head at the end of the book and still can't figure out how the paranormal connects with ufology.
Right.
But I included it in our book, The Cursed Net, because I thought it punctuated the point that there is a very strong connection between the paranormal and ufology, and Ouija boards just happen to be one of the aspects of the paranormal that are so connecting it. So I thought that was an interesting story, especially when you add to it stories like, well, Ouija boards, you try to get rid of them. And I know two independent people didn't even know one another who tried to get rid of a Ouija board and would come back the next day. So
yeah, I don't even know whose it was or who would have bought that for their kids, but there it was, you know, when you're at a sleepover or something like that.
Well, you'd be surprised. I mean, look at the society we live in. It's basically a human secular society to begin with. I think we've lost our Christian compass in America, and it's getting more apparent as time goes on, as we rush now pell-mell into the 21st century. And this is one of the reasons, by the way, that I address other issues in my introduction to show that all of these things are not happening in a vacuum. There's a causal reason why some of the forces that are operating in and around our planet somehow are connected with other forces that somehow do not like us. And the phenomena that we talk about is like the tip of the iceberg of things that people don't seem to want to address. As Joe Jordan well knows, this evidence not only is it not wanted, it's in denial, because people don't want to come to grips with the truth of what's in the Bible. So let's put that aside, though. These are all very interesting issues, and the fact that you have been, in essence, at least touching on these things as your life went on, I think is very interesting. You see, there was another thing that I found interesting also, and you yourself had indicated in your bio that you hung around with racists. And now my question is, was that before, during, or after your experience in the Army? And what do you think, and what led you to associate with these type of people?
Well, you know, it was the same group of people. It was the same girl, you know, we'd just hang out at her house and drink and, you know, not really do anything, but just hang around and party or whatever, you know, having a good time. And that was just something that, who knows how people like that are brought together, but I'm sure that it's, you know, somebody's behind it. you run into this person, you run into that person, and before you know it, you know, there you all are.
Mm-hmm. And of course, when you were doing this, you didn't especially see these people as evil, I assume, right?
No. Not really. I mean, not any more than anybody else. I mean, to me, it was just kind of like the same type of thing. It's like a parlor trick, you know. It's just something you go hang out together and bad talk other people and point the finger at other people, or, you know, get your palms red, whatever. It's a half dozen, one or the other, whatever. To me, now when I look back on it, it's all the same. You know, some people might point the finger and say, oh, witchcraft, mm-hmm. this, or, you know, racism, but it's all from the same enemy. It all springs from the same source.
Okay, and did you ever check your family tree to see if there was any connections with anybody who might have led you into any of these areas at all?
I did ask my mom and dad. My dad's side of the family is very little is known about that, and they couldn't really confirm whether, you know, they were into any Freemasonry or not, or anything like that. But the other side, my mom's side, the family story is that my great-great-grandfather was in the Klan or some sort of a group, and he had taken my great-grandfather once when he was a kid, and it had scared him. Whatever was going on in this group that they were doing these meetings at, you know, it had scared him, and he didn't want anything to do with it.
Right.
I've heard it was the Klan, but I don't know. It could have been any one of any groups out there. They're all the same.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, now speaking of the Army, I assume you've been to a number of different places, either around the country or around the world. Was there any place in particular that interested you, or you had any type of experience with or would like to at least mention before we get into the things that happened to you?
I don't know. I have been all over the world and all over the United States. I don't know if there's any one place that stood out as somewhere where I'd be like, you know, I have a really good story for you here, but I'm not really sure about that. I mean, they were all interesting to me growing up in Ohio.
Right. Yeah, right. And it's like a farm state, Ohio, right?
Yes,
basically
lots of corn.
Lots of corn, and then, of course, you go from one cornfield to another, and in between there are industrial cities.
Yes, pretty much.
That's the way I view Ohio. But so you were born in Ohio. You went around to various areas, and I assume you're back in Ohio now. Is that right?
I'm back to the same side of Columbus that I was born on, and I've been, went full circle.
Yeah, okay. All right, now, that sort of takes care of the 80s, but in the 90s, I know you actually married a Christian, and you actually came back to Christ. Now, what did you, is there anything that you stopped doing for sure, and how did that experience change your life?
We're coming back to Christ.
Yes.
And, well, yeah. Oh, yeah. I stopped everything. I didn't, you know, I didn't abuse substances anymore. I'd cut my ties, you know, with racist groups, and I'd pretty much got my act together. But now wasn't the end all, though. I mean, I did after that period, you know, after I had my experience, I went through a divorce and then found myself back, you know, not as bad as before, I don't think, but I did have another period of a few years in there where I had gone my own way again. I'm a slow learner.
Well, join the human race. I felt the same way, you know, when I was studying the ins and outs of ufology and the cul-de-sacs and the I frame them as being in a desert where you're looking for the oasis and you're finding anything but getting stuck in ruts, one rut after another. And then the sandstorms actually get in your eyes to such an extent you practically become blind, because the very thing you're looking for, you somehow can't find it. So you wind up going in circles. So, but that's interesting that here you're coming back. You're going from the straight and narrow to the broad and, what did I say?
Broad and deadly.
And now back to the straight and narrow. But then here we go again. There's a problem that comes in your life. And this is interesting because if that happened in the early 90s, I know that's when I started first having these paranormal experiences myself in 1993. So I sort of like remembered that date. But you said that a few years later, you had a shocking encounter of the fourth kind. Now, this is where I'd like to focus a little bit, Jason, if you can. Take your time here, because we have plenty of time.
Okay.
Suppose you spend a few minutes just going through this and giving us some of the details of exactly what happened. And this would, I'm not sure of this. Let me just ask the second question, and then you can start. Was this before or after your divorce that this encounter took place?
This was before.
Okay.
I was totally cleaned up. I was actually active in my church. I was active with Bible studies. I was full tilt for God at the point.
Okay. All right. So this is before the trouble started. But, all right. So what exactly happened? Just paint all of these details tell us what went on.
Okay. It was about 1997 is my best guess, and the reason I don't remember that is because at first I wasn't really sure what I had experienced, and I didn't really put it together until years later. So my best guess is it was about 97, and I was sleeping in a basement at the time, in a finished basement, and I was laying in bed, and my best guess, it was probably, you know, between midnight and 2, my eyes just popped open. I was laying on my back looking at the ceiling, and I just had that feeling like somebody's watching you. And I mm-hmm. opened my eyes, and I at the foot of my bed, there were three beings standing there. And they were definitely like reptilian looking, with the you know, the scales and the wide mouth. That like the best way I can describe them is the Slea Stacks off the Land of the Lost. They looked just like that. Had like robes on, and they were standing there. And as soon as I saw them, I immediately got the sense that they meant to do me harm, and they were evil. There was no doubt in my mind about it.
And you were fully awake at the time?
When I opened my eyes at that second, when I saw them, I was definitely fully awake. But I was also... I was fully paralyzed as well. And I, there's, like, no sound would come out of my mouth. I couldn't move at all. All I could do was move my eyes and just watch them. And as soon as they saw me, you know, looking at them, they drifted around to the side of the bed that I was laying on and picked me, the center one picked me up, like, as light as I would be made, like a helium balloon, just picked me up, a hand on each of my biceps, and lifted me up, and...
Right.
Opened its mouth and breathed this hot sulfur furnace blast in my face, and then we kind of backed away from the bed and rotated upside down and started to go through the floor, like actually down into the ground. And I'm in the basement, so I'm like, whoa, where are they taking me? I don't want to go down there, wherever it is. And that's when I called out and I said, I rebuke you in the name of Jesus, and instantly I was back in my bed. And I could move. I mean, I was still terrified, but I knew I was back in my bed, and I just had to catch my breath and kind of calm down a little bit. But that was basically it. That's what happened.
I hope you didn't go back to drugs at that point.
No.
Okay, so now, were you alone in the room?
No, my ex-wife was actually in the bed with me, and when I started thinking back on it, I realized that I don't think they were actually at my foot of the bed. I think they might have even been at her side at the bottom, because when I picture it in my head, they were off to the left side, and I was on the right, so they may not even have been there for me. I don't know. Even though I gave them plenty of, you know, reasons to come after me, they might not have been there for me.
Wow. Yeah, right. Okay. This business of the sulfur, and you just mentioned that there was like a sulfur-smelling air right in your face by one of these beings?
Yeah, it was suffocating, like you stuck your face behind a jet engine. You know, it just kind of blasted me with hot air, and it just stunk of rotten eggs.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now,
Byron,
question here. Okay. Yes.
Just to jiggle your memory a little bit, you know, when I heard Jason tell me this when I was talking to him last week, it brought to mind Kathy Land's testimony where she felt the entity right up against her and breathe on her too. And this is only the second time that I've ever come across this experience where people actually have felt their breath and actually been able to smell it. And I just wanted to interject that in there.
Yeah, thank you, Joe. I mean, that's true. And even with all the research I've done, this is a very rare type of thing. I mean, to me, it's like a wow experience. And I was going to, and thank you, Joe, for that. I remember Kathy mentioning that regarding these beings and how she felt that herself. But I had another question about that whole thing. Were you anywhere aware in 1997, Jason, about this whole concept of sulfur and these entities and what might be a clue as to understanding them by this particular signature smell?
No, not at all. I had read things on UFOs since I was a kid. I'd checked out books, you know, from the library, and I you know, looked into it over the year. It was just an interesting subject, but never once did I put the two and two together, like, wait a minute, what's going on here? Who are these people? or these things.
Right. Okay, now that's interesting. Now, one of the reasons that I included the Book of Enoch in the cursed net was Richard Satter and I had both had different types of experiences, but when I had told Richard to read the Book of Enoch, he actually showed me certain quotes from the Book of Enoch that indicated that Enoch was well aware that of this causal connection with these fallen angels and demons.
Well, you know, I knew the connection, that I knew they were demons and somehow they were connected with that, but I didn't put the connection with alien space, you know, quote unquote space aliens.
Okay. All right, what I'm going to do now is, before we go to the next question, I'm going to actually read you a verse from the Ethiopian Book of Enoch regarding the fate of the fallen angels. And this is really interesting, Jason, from a numbers point of view, because the verse that I'm going to quote you is 1 Enoch 66:6. So it's 666.
Right.
And I kid you not. And there's another, and by the way, there's another reference for anybody who's interested. If you go to the Slavonic Book of Enoch, which is called Enoch 2, and go to 66:6, you're going to see another reference that deals with the fallen angels too. I found that very coincidental. But let me just read you this quote. This is regarding the fate of the fallen angels. Verse 6. And when all this was affected from the fluid mass of fire and the perturbations which prevailed in that place, there arose a strong smell of sulfur which became mixed with the waters, and the belly of the angels who had been guilty of seduction burned underneath its soil. And then verse 7 goes on to say, through that valley also rivers of fire were flowing, to which these angels shall be condemned, who seduced the inhabitants of the earth. So it makes a causal connection between, for all intent and purposes, this would be the fallen angels of Genesis 6:4 cohabitating with the daughters of men. And this is the fate which was alluded to in the letter of Jude and the letter of Peter in the New Testament, that corroborates there is a connection between these entities, whether you want to split hairs and call them fallen angels or demons, and sulfur smells. And once you get, if you rolled around in it enough, apparently however they take to get to you at the foot of your bed, apparently the smell doesn't leave them. So I just thought that would be an interesting verse to bring up at this juncture based on this incredible experience that you just had with these things. Now, at this point, you're going to obviously, I would assume, I don't know, that you're going to now try to get to the bottom of this, become an inspector, so to speak.
Right.
And where did you go to try to get answers to what just happened to you?
Where everybody else goes, internet, and the Bible. I actually read the Book of Enoch, and I'd heard, you know, from going and looking in different places, you know, it's kind of like you bounce around a little bit until you finally weed through all the garbage, and then you start to put, you know, a piece from here and a piece from there, and then you start to see a bigger picture. Eventually, and eventually I saw that bigger picture, and it was when I had went and checked out the Alien Resistance site with Joe Jordan and the CE4, and then it all started making sense. I started reading through other people's stories, and I'm like, wait a minute, this is all sounding too familiar. You know, this has got to be what I've been looking for here, the final, you know, answer on, you know, an answer that made sense. And that was backed up scripturally.
We have Joe Jordan with us now, so I think this might be a very good opportunity to just dramatize a little bit. What were some of the things you found on Guy Malone's site, the Alien Resistance site, that tied in at least somewhat with this experience you had? And then do the same with Josite, just from what you remember, basic things.
The most basic things were the things like paralysis and a feeling of they meant you harm and that they're evil. Just the very basics like that. When you start to put them all together, you know, why are these, you know, and I think, you know, even looking at other sites, there were other things that were stories where people had not referred to them as aliens, you know, but as a demonic type of an attack. And there are also similarities there.
Mm-hmm.
But mostly for me, it was the things that I experienced, the paralysis, the terror, the, you know, just the reptilian nature of them, all of that together that I've picked from other stories were like, okay, now I'm starting to see a pattern here.
Yeah. Well, before you get to what you found on Joe's site, I got to ask you an unfair question.
Okay.
I don't do this often, but I think you can handle it. You ready?
Give it to me.
And I just thought of this. I didn't have a plan of this, but something tells me to ask you this question. What would have happened, do you think, what would have happened at the foot of your bed when you went through this experience and you were rotating and going down into the floor with these things? What would have happened if you did not rebuke these beings or entities in the name of Jesus Christ? What do you think would have happened?
I don't really think that ever would have happened. I mean, I could venture to say that maybe they would have taken me somewhere and, you know, attempted to torture me or scare me or, you know, just torment you is what they're good at.
Mm-hmm.
Just harass
right.
me. I mean, I don't think they had permission to take my life. But I really don't. I think maybe, you know, maybe they were actually the ones that were set up and, you know, maybe God had a good chuckle when their hands got burnt, you know, or whatever. I don't know.
Right.
To me,
that's something
that I don't really have to know about, you know. I know my part, God knows his part, and that's
right.
the way it went down.
And obviously, God has foreknowledge of everything, so therefore, he couldn't affect have a chuckle because he knew probably what you were going to do. He knew definitely what you were going to do. And having come from a good Christian sound background to begin with, I guess that came in handy, didn't it?
But not that I'm saying that God would ever put you up as, you know, some sort of a joke he's pulling on somebody and let you be terrified and have it affect your life. And I'm not saying he would do that. I'm just saying he probably knew that I could handle it and he knew how much I could take, and so he let it happen.
Okay. Well, yes, Joe.
Just a couple of things to interject here. That's a good point that he's bringing up, and also that when you just brought up God in his foreknowledge. This is an amazing concept if you think about it, that God in his foreknowledge with these testimonies and what we're about to see happen with the ability of having these testimonies heard by other people and what the outcome could possibly be from all of this, that just puts us all in a huge perspective, you know. And the second thing I wanted to bring up, going back to the smells, I'm looking at a piece of news that came here from the space station, and one of the astronauts was quoted, astronaut Ford, Kevin Ford. He says one of the things he wasn't ready for was the weird smell. From the spacewalks, there really is a distinct smell of space when they come back in. Ford said from the station in a Friday night news conference, it's something like I haven't ever smelled before, but I'll never forget it. In the past, astronauts have described the smell of space as something akin to gunpowder or ozone.
Yeah.
Right, which is a sulfur smell. Gunpowder has that smell.
Sure.
To it.
Mm-hmm. Now, forgive my ignorance, but how would they be able to smell space? They're in these contained suits with their own oxygen. Where do they get?
Well,
how do they get this?
From what I'm reading here,
Joe,
I think he might have dropped out.
Yeah, we had a problem last week. Joe was getting a double signal, and then he'll call back in, Jason.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, I can answer that question for you, or for
yeah,
him.
Yeah, I would like to hear that, Jason. Go ahead.
Have you ever, like, on certain days, like maybe a cooler day, where somebody will come in from the outside, especially if maybe it's snowed, and there's like a smell on them, kind of like an ozone smell. So it's on their suits, and when they come in, at some point, something that touched the outside air is coming in.
Right. I get that after a rainstorm. I do, when I go inside, I do smell the ozone. From that analogy, I understand exactly what you're talking about. You know. By the way, Jason, we're getting down to probably the last 12 or 13 minutes, but if Joe comes back in, we'll continue that conversation from his perspective. But I would like to ask you now, you had two experiences this year, correct? They were like, I guess, strange, unidentified sighting type of experiences. Suppose you tell the listening audience exactly what you saw and what you might have thought that was all about.
You know, I really don't know what I saw, but it was, you know, the word UFO, it covers it because it was an unidentified flying object. I mean, something flying in, you know, over the house, but I didn't really get any feeling whether it was bad or good. It was just one of those things where you kind of scratch your head and ask yourself, what was that? You know, maybe it's harassment, maybe it's was something that was, you know, identifiable, but I didn't know what it was. I'm not really sure.
Mm-hmm.
But both objects were in the same part of the sky, the same speed. You know, it's kind of a coincidental thing that, you know, maybe they're just flying over, like doing a drive-by, making sure I know that they're watching me or trying to, you know, scare me. I don't know. I didn't really get a bad or a good feeling from it.
Okay, the key, though, is you didn't get a good feeling from it.
No, I don't see why God would have any purpose to send, hey, go fly over this guy's house and make him wonder what's going on. It probably wasn't good, but, you know, it wasn't anything that I was too concerned about.
And did you get the distinct impression that it was like more of an entity rather than
I definitely did not see it as a craft of any kind. It was more like the first one looked a lot like an angel, like if you saw an angel from maybe 3 or 4 football fields away, you know, like a white, feathery, wispy look to it. And then the other one had, you know, that was at night, but it also had it definitely had wings, and it looked more of like a butterfly crossed with an angel type of thing than it did as a craft or a ship or something.
Right. Yeah. Well, the co-author of our book, The Curse of Net, Richard Stout, he had two very unusual experiences. One was he actually saw a reptilian being that was about 8 foot tall when he was about 14 years old, and he had a witness and described it similarly to the way you did regarding these beings, only this was a real reptilian with real teeth, and it had the scaly green skin with the yellow eye and the vertical pupil.
Right.
And, you know, to a 14-year-old who's looking at this thing, and he knew it was 8 foot tall because of the way the clothesline was in connection with the being, he was scared out of his absolute wits.
Oh, I bet.
And then, like a wild teenager, just kind of not as probably as racy as you were, but when he was in his later teens, he actually was with his friends on this old hotel was abandoned, and they were and there was a full moon, and they were no more than 300 feet from this hotel, which was 3 stories high,
uh-huh.
And this is out on Long Island. And he actually saw this, like a creature, at the top of this hotel. And he saw it take, and his friend saw it too. It took off and glided glided around, and it actually was silhouetted against the full moon. And later on, when I described certain things that happened in during the Mothman incident in 1967, and I described to him that, he says, yeah, that's exactly what we saw.
Right.
Like a Mothman, you know. The wings, they don't flap, they glide.
Uh-huh.
So I'm thinking, as you're telling me this story, that maybe you're seeing some resemblance to something like that, only now instead of it being dark, it was maybe a lighter color.
I don't know. My wife was right there the second time, and we both couldn't come to an agreement on what it looked like. You know, we could only agree that it was strange and that it had wings, but beyond that, it kind of differed because it was just so bizarre.
Right. No, this is your wife. I assume she's Christian. Is that right?
Yes. Yes.
And this is like your marriage after the divorce. Is that correct?
Right. Right.
Yeah. Okay. And yeah, that's interesting that you had this experience this year. Now, did anything happen between the time you saw the entity and this year when you had these two experiences with these unidentified whatever?
No, as far as supernatural things. Well, one time we had walked by a witchcraft store downtown, just walking with friends, and as we walked with our backs to it across the street, we felt like we're talking, this was about mid-August, which is usually like 90 degrees here, even after the sun goes down. And we all felt like an icy blast of air come from behind us, and we all just kind of looked at each other like, did you feel that? But at the time, we just kind of brushed it off, you know. Maybe it was just a draft or whatever, but that's the only thing out of the ordinary that I can really remember.
Yeah. I've had that experience, too. It's a very eerie experience.
Yeah.
Even if it only happens once, it's still eerie, and especially if you can't identify it with something else. Like with myself, it happened in a enclosed room with no windows open or doors open or any type of where air could have suddenly brushed past my ear, let's say. You know,
right, right.
So I knew something very unusual was taking place, even though I didn't know what it is. So, well, anyway, did we get Joe? Joe, did you get back, or are you gone for good? Uh-oh. Labor Day. Probably had to cut out. So, yeah, this happens anyway. Well, listen, Jason, we still have a few minutes left. Would you you have any sort of like parting ideas you'd like to leave with the listeners as far as your experience, some of the things you've been involved with, what you're intending on doing from here on in, or anything along those lines?
One thing I was thinking about was there's different fields of work, you know, for us to do. And this is to the people who are Christians that are listening. Some people, you know, feed the poor. Some are evangelists. Some, you know, are involved with maybe protesting an abortion clinic and different things like that. This is one field that's probably the big field right now that is it's going to come down to play a part in the end times, I think. You know, a big part, and it's a field where the devil is having a heyday, and he's got all kinds of different people working on this. And I think it's time that, you know, it's time for people like Joe and everybody else to really stick their nose to the grindstone and give it our all, because I don't know how much more time we have left. This is a huge delusion that's going on, and the devil's having a field day, and there's nobody out there. There are people out there, but there's not enough out there, I don't think, that are spreading the word, because I've studied the Bible my whole life, and I've never made this connection until I was in my 30s.
And there's a reason for that. I know we had Pastor Chris Ward on last year, and he said that he actually went to Bible school, and that's the one thing they don't teach, is the connection among the fallen angels, demons, and the Bible.
I asked my dad the same question, and he said that he couldn't remember exactly what they had taught on the subject, but to his best recollection, they had just said, here's the Son of Seth doctrine, here's this one and this one, you take your pick on which one because nobody can agree on it. And didn't really teach it, just told them, you know, good luck figuring it out.
Well, all I can say, there are answers to this question. This is one of the reasons we wrote our thesis. And by the way, let me just say a couple of things, since you brought up a very interesting subject. I'll start with, you know, what you may want to endeavor to do. We had a number of people, and I get a chance to talk to them privately. Like, well, for instance, Janet of West Virginia, who was on recently, this is what she wants to do now. She's been through the mill with all of this stuff and coming from an abusive family, in her case, and having experiences. And now she wants to connect with other testimonial people, for that matter, and work as a network to do things to lengthen and the breadth of understanding as far as the things you're not being told about, that this world, which is controlled by Satan, is obviously controlling so many other things that, you know, you're left in a very ignorant state if you depend on watching television for your news, for instance.
Oh, sure.
So, yes, I agree that, and this is a part of the network, and the more people that come forward, and as yourself, you know, you've given your written testimony, but there's nothing like an audio testimony, Jason, where people can match the tenor of your voice to what you're saying and then go check it out themselves to see it's true. Just like I challenge people with a mandatory vaccination. I take this thing very seriously as being not only a father but a grandfather, and I would hate to see people inject themselves with things that may be deleterious to their health. But right. I'm not saying I'm not a doctor, so I can't demand that you do this. But I'd say, listen, check it out thoroughly, though, before you accept anybody's word on the matter, because certain people have agendas that may be attached to certain things where they get incentives for saying things, and it has nothing to do with the reality of the situation. And I'll just let it go at that. You see?
No, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, and so that's why I take these things very seriously as far as just getting people to check things out. That's why I have this website. Hopefully it'll be up again next week once I get everything straightened out. If I had a problem with my computer, but hopefully by the end of the week everything will be good again. But, yes, I agree with you totally. We need to have a whole group of people marching forward and then – other people joining the fray, because this is what it is. It's spiritual warfare. There's no getting around it. So I'll just leave it at that for now. But sure enough, this is certainly a worthy of endeavor. And the more people that are involved in showing and counterbalancing all of this nonsense that we hear in ufology, I think the better off we're going to be. You know.
Right.
Well, anyway, we're getting down to the last minute or two, and normally, Jason, what I like to do is just give a little thought from Scripture that ties in with some of the things that you may have said, and I found something in Psalm 32 that I think is very interesting. It goes like this. Blessed is he whose transgression is forgiven, whose sin is covered. Blessed is the man to whom the Lord imputes no iniquity, and in whose spirit there is no deceit. And that's verses 1 and 2 of Psalm 32. And as we know, man is deceitfully wicked, so we should not trust in him or herself, but only in God. Call upon God in all sincerity, and he will hear you. Then repent with all your heart. So this is one of the things I feel very strongly about, especially having gone astray and trying to figure things out for myself. That was my first big mistake. So now I've come to the conclusion that it's reliance on the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. That's what's going to keep us on the straight and narrow.
I agree.
So, well, anyway, there's that music. That means, as I used to say, we're going to turn into pumpkin juice. So, I just want to thank you for being on the program. And do come back, you know, if anything else does transpire, and let me know how things work out there with you, okay?
I will do that. Thanks, Byron.
Okay, you're welcome. I want to thank Joe, of course, for making it possible for people like Jason to voice their powerful testimony in the name of Jesus. And to all those listening, have a peaceful night and a fruitful tomorrow. Good night, everybody.
Good night.